Hi, it's Frida Rivo, and this is my podcast. Today on the show, we have Brandy. She is the founder of the nonprofit organization, A Little Rescue. Her organization takes in the horses that has no other place to call home. She stands up for the sick and the horses that has little to no hope left. I have the enormous privilege to help her run the organization that she has built and stand next to her in some of the most difficult moments. We share some of the best moments that this life has to offer, but also some of the worst. It is a great honor not only to have her as my team leader, but also call her my friend. Welcome, Brandy. Hi, Brandy. Welcome to this podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Is this your first podcast ever?
Yes, it okay. Is.
Oh, you're nervous?
I mean, I'm at my home with you, so no.
Okay. So please tell our listeners, like, who are you as a horsewoman?
Huge animal lover. Rode horses when I was really, really young. Always thought that I would have a horse in my future. And finally, in my early 30s, I was able to rescue my first horse. I am obsessed with them. Their magic, their friendship, their connection.
Now she gets emotional.
And then I get emotional.
No, it happens every time.
And just, you know, lessons that they teach you and the stuff that's so unexpected about them. Oh my God, this is like therapy for me.
That's what I want this podcast to be.
No, it's really, it's because it's changed my life so much to have the relationship that I had with my first rescue horse. And then for it to really take me to figure out and on this journey to figure out who I really am at the core. Like,
yes.
I feel like I was living my life for so long and kind of going along without real purpose or meaning. And I found me in this process.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I want to ask all guests, which I think most of them are going to be women. It's like, who are you aspire to be? Mm-hmm. Like when you set out on your quest to be a horsewoman, mm-hmm. like what type of horsewoman did you want to be? And do you feel that you are her today?
I do. I wanted to be like a mother figure, and I wanted to give them things that they had never had before. And I wanted to learn about them like I do my children, as individuals, and then honor whatever that is for them.
So how come you started A Little Rescue, which is a nonprofit organization for mostly horses, but you've also had other animals?
So I rescued my first horse like almost about 7 years ago, and had this idea that, you know, I was going to ride, because that's what people always think they're going to do with their horse. And the horse I ended up rescuing was an off-the-track thoroughbred. He was really, really skinny and had sort of been neglected. And I really just couldn't physically ride him. And so it was kind of odd for me to have taken on this responsibility and then be told that I couldn't get on this horse. And so I would go every single day. I was boarding at the time, and I had to really care for him and learn about him and you know, and actually become the person that he relied on.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like through that journey and through figuring out how did this animal end up like this and why does this happen,
mm-hmm.
I started really figuring out a lot about horses, neglect, abuse, kill buyers, all these things I really didn't realize. And then I realized there were auctions in my area where this kind of stuff was going on. And I was just at a time in my life when I was ready to do something for myself. I'd had both my children, mm-hmm. and my husband, and I felt like I needed something that was mine, that would fulfill just me and what I needed for myself, you know?
Would you say that showing up for these rescue horses made you show up for yourself in a new way?
Absolutely. 100%.
Yeah.
I think I am like a nurturing, caring person by nature, with my friends, with my family, with the people that I love so much. And I feel like I was able to be 100% me when I took on this mission, you know?
So if you described, if you would, I mean, I do know this organization well. I work for this organization, and I think, but how would you describe it? If you would describe it to someone that's never heard about a Little Rescue before, how would you tell them about us?
I think what we do that I really pride myself on is every single horse that comes into our care has the option to stay for the rest of their life. Yeah. So I feel like, yes, we do rescue horses, mm-hmm. either from, you know, referrals or, you know, auctions or wherever we may get them. We never know, and nor any rescues, we never know what we're going to get or yeah. who that horse is going to be or what they're going to need, right?
Yes, exactly.
So we've had situations where we realize that the best place for that horse is to stay with us.
Yes.
And we've had situations where, boom, right off the bat, you do a little bit of training and yeah. they're out the door.
Yeah.
And I think the thing about us is people can rely on the fact that we will give every single animal 100% of what they need from start to finish.
Yeah. And I would say that at this point, we do have, if you compare to where maybe the organization started, I think there's a lot more animals than maybe was expected.
Yes.
So we feel like maybe we're not a little rescue anymore. But if you compare to other organizations,
we are still very little.
Very small.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that is also important to keep it a certain size.
Yes.
Because the care that goes into each individual animal and is so large. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't mean that other organization doesn't do that, but I just think that it means that if a horse comes here, it is covered for the rest of its life.
Absolutely. Yes.
And then when it does get adopted out, it's not that we will, you know, own a part of that horse forever, but I think what it means is like we're a backup system to make sure that no matter what happens in that horse's life, it always has a home.
Yes.
It's almost like a kid that moves away from home and lives his whole own life and gets its own family and everything, but
yes.
you can always come
always home. Always come home. And it's actually happened before.
Yes.
And I agree with you. I do think if I was gonna give anybody advice on rescue, I think mm-hmm. depending on what you and your team can handle, only bringing in what you can handle is to whatever capacity that is or whatever yeah. that means for you as yeah. an individual rescue. We did in this last couple years take on more than what was normal for us for very personal issues. And I don't regret it, but I do think it was a learning lesson for all of us, but especially for me who kind of pulled the trigger on that, to really be careful about taking on more than you can handle.
Yeah, and I think one of our mottos are quality over quantity.
Yes.
And not euthanizing for space because we're saying that this money could be used for many other animals.
Younger, more adoptable, yeah. whatever it is.
Yeah. Exactly. And I think that is what sets your organization apart from others. And I am super honored to be a part of this team.
Aw, well, so honored to have you.
What are some of the most challenging things about running an operation?
I think because we have such a small team
yeah.
and because we're sort of like a mom and pop version of a rescue,
mm-hmm.
I think, you know, we all build these relationships and they become so personal and the journey for each animal becomes so personal. And so it's odd that it's just as hard for me to not have adopted a horse out, knowing that they may need something more than we can give them at some point.
Mm-hmm.
But when they go,
yeah.
it's, I mean, we hysterically cry at yeah. every single
yeah.
exit.
Yeah.
So I think that's really difficult. And I think having, you know, 20 to 30 animals in a small rescue and only having one trainer, you know, like it becomes really difficult to get them out the door. And, you know, I will say that that's another thing that we do different from just the organizations that I am familiar with is we sometimes will take animals that we believe the best thing for them is to just go be a horse for the first year of their life and really not have formal training. And so sometimes that is also works kind of, I would say, against us because we do take that time.
And I think it used to, something that used to stress me a little bit would be like, okay, because we want to rescue new, so these horses kind of had to be done in a way, or they had to move forward.
Yes.
And I think I've let go of that concept now because I do believe that each thing takes its own time. No matter how much I train it, it's not going to be ready until it's ready.
Exactly.
So it's like we're having a new adoption happen right now, which I didn't think was going to happen for a long time.
A long time.
But she was ready because she was ready. And it just happened anyway. And the universe just works in such mysterious ways.
Yes.
But so would you say that the best part about running a rescue is kind of the same thing as the hardest part?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think it's so fulfilling to get to really get to know them and to look at them as individuals and to gain trust and friendship and then send them off somewhere else because you feel like, are they going to be okay without us? Are they going to, is someone going to look at them and honor them and take care of them the way that we meticulously did, you know, but in the same respect, you look at some of them and you know that their forever family or person is out there and they could just have, they could flourish in the most incredible ways. I mean, we just had that with one of our horses. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was two horses at once, but one of them in particular, the gelding, I mean, I look at him now and I'm just like, I mean, it's the greatest ending for him and beginning, you know, so it works both ways.
I think it's like, it's beautiful to see. I used to, and now, I mean, like, I'm still really sad when they leave, but I used to feel like this enormous sense of loss.
Yeah.
Especially like when we left some, like the horses, like Stevie and things like that.
Yes.
I mean, like that was extremely hard for me.
Yeah.
Now, when we have the horses, then when we leave the horses somewhere, it's like I feel this enormous sense of pride.
Yes.
But also like such a joy for them.
Yeah.
Because it's almost like I started seeing like the rescue like an orphanage. And like, you know.
A good way to say it though. Yeah.
Yeah. Like we are like, they can live here until they turn 18 or whatever.
Right.
But
to then, see them go off with their family and like and have these incredible memories and also have and also there's a peace in seeing that somebody else sees them the way that we see them and that they have that person that's going, you know what I mean? Like that's such an incredible thing
and that's how I think if someone asks me like how do you pick a home for them is when I find a person that sees that horse the way that I see
exactly.
It, that's how I pick it.
I totally agree with that. Totally. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
So, okay. What would you say? Because I think we get a lot of questions like, oh, I really want to do what you do one day. I really want to rescue. Like, what would be like your top three things? Like, maybe not open an organization because that's like, I think, a big operation. But let's say if you want to rescue a horse, like, what would be your top three things to think about?
So I would say, first of all, you really need to understand what goes into owning a horse. So I would almost, like it was a business plan, do a budget so that you could talk to somebody, whether it was a vet or a trainer or someone else who would own a horse. And I think the most important thing is not having a fairy tale about it because it is expensive, it is extremely hard work, and it takes up a lot of your time.
Yeah.
So I do think be very realistic about who you are, where you are, and what you can offer this animal or these animals. You know, I also feel like prepare for what's unexpected. Mm-hmm. Unexpected things happen all the time, and a lot of times those unexpected things are extremely expensive.
Yes.
And you don't have time to save up for it when it happens. You have to make decisions very quickly when those things happen.
Yeah.
This is your family member. Mm-hmm. This is forever. Like, and I'm not saying people shouldn't take on horses to train them and then they can sell them and then they can, you know, everyone's got their own version of that. But you do have to, if you are going to take on a horse, you know, realize that, you know, they live for you know, 20, 30 yeah. something years. Mm-hmm. And so I do think that that for me is a definite.
Yeah.
Even I, along the way, had to learn and understand, because yeah. I had the fairy tale,
yeah.
how hard it is to do,
yeah.
you know, this care and this, you know, have this amazing relationship with these majestic animals. It takes a lot.
Next question is my favorite. What are the biggest lessons that horses have taught you?
Oh gosh. Okay. Well, I think the biggest lesson, which of course I already knew, but is to never judge a book by its cover.
Yes.
So, you know, sometimes this idea of what kind of horse you want becomes the complete opposite of what you actually need. So for me, I had that little childhood dream of thinking that, like, I wanted this, you know, beautiful chestnut mare, you know, who was really young and wild. Meanwhile, I had no experience for a horse like that, but that's what I had in my head that I was going to get. What I ended up with that changed my life was a very old, skinny, off-the-track thoroughbred.
Yeah.
You know, and so that experience made me realize that you have to throw all the ideas of what is meant for you mm-hmm. aside. I know we've had people come here specifically for a horse and leave with another horse. I think you have to be really open-minded when you're choosing your partner, you know?
Yeah. So you would say that the biggest lesson that you've learned is to be open to what it is that they are and what they have to teach you.
Yes, and what's right for you. You know, because what you have in your head is not necessarily what is best for you.
Yeah.
You know?
No, I totally agree with that. I think that a lot of people that come here and they have a horse in mind because they've seen it on the website or the Instagram, they usually don't end up with that horse.
Right.
They end up with something completely different. And I had this conversation with a girl yesterday when I said, I think that horses are sent to you and in your life because they have a message to give to you.
Mm-hmm.
And the new adoption that we're doing right now, it was... Actually, I didn't tell you this. I'll tell you this now in the podcast. So this woman had gone to an animal communicator and said, one of the horses that you're going to look at has a problem with his foot.
That's so crazy.
I know. And she was like, no, it doesn't. So she didn't see the correlation. So one of the horses that she did look at, yes, that didn't work out, not because of the foot, but because of many other reasons.
Right.
But then she said, the horse that you're going to find will bring so much happiness and joy into your life and is not supposed to always be so difficult. And then when I called this girl and we were talking about our session that we had, I said, listen, it doesn't always have to be difficult. It can also be fun. And I don't ever say that.
Right.
That's like, because I think that you should... I'm always about like the challenge and take on the
right.
difficult one. And so
right.
that was a new thing for me to say, but I thought that was like super interesting.
A lot of crazy stuff like that I feel like has been happening to us
yes.
recently, especially.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In the intro, when I talk about you, I talk about us seeing some of the happiest moments of our life together.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's so beautiful that we share that.
Yes, I do too.
But I also think that we share some of the most difficult moments.
Yes. Yes, we do. Rita!
No, I know. It's super emotional because Brandy and I, we've known each other going on 6 years, but we don't really ever sit down like this. We're always on the go. We're always talking about an animal. What is the medical plan?
Right.
Like, what do we have to buy?
Right.
What are we doing? So it's very nice to sit down and talk to you, but also, you know, so that in many years we can look back at this footage.
Yes.
And, you know, we'll have...
And cry.
Yeah. And be like, oh, we have only lost 5 horses at that point.
Yeah.
But so when you're faced with a difficult decision when it comes to medical care,
mm-hmm.
what is like a mantra? What keeps you calm and grounded in those situations?
I feel like I know the horses really well on an emotional level. And I feel like my intuition allows me to say whether or not that particular horse will have a quality of life or will be happy through the process that they have to go through, right? So I have limits in my head as to how far I will take something depending on how the horse is reacting to what's put in front of them. We have had some of the most insane situations where I really in my gut did not know whether the horse was going to make it. And I wondered whether we were going to have to euthanize the horse. And what I've also learned about that is if you make a quick decision, we're just dealing with this mm-hmm. now. We've dealt with it so many times in the past. You may be making a mistake. If it's not an emergency that's literally right in front of you where it's like there's absolutely nothing else you can do.
Yeah.
Sometimes waiting it out is the best thing you can do. And that is what tells you or guides you or gives you the answer that you need. So I stay calm in just knowing that my relationship with them and my knowing them will tell me when it's the right time. I also stay calm in knowing that I have a team of people around me who love the animals as much as I do. And we will all pick each other up and help each other as needed. And that happens at all different times. Sometimes you're falling apart, I'm falling apart, et cetera.
And I think that, you know, what I have recently learned is like we were in a situation where the horse was extremely sick.
Mm-hmm.
And it would have been the right thing to call it mm-hmm. and euthanize at that point. I mean, that I don't think, knowing what we know now,
mm-hmm.
I would have never forgiven myself for doing it.
Yes.
But in that moment, I would have also been at peace with calling it. But I think the biggest lesson of all of this was when we said, let's give all the meds that we can. And at this point, one night either way
is not going to make a difference.
So, you know, just to take a moment,
mm-hmm.
you know, and just wait.
Yes. Yeah. That I think is how we have gotten through some of the biggest success stories that we've had. In fact, mm-hmm. the biggest success story that we had was waiting and giving it more time. And that success story, which was really our biggest success in the entire history of this rescue, is now living with an incredible herd and has the exact situation that was meant for her. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that wouldn't have happened had we not given that situation the time that it needed to have that outcome, you know?
And that went, I mean, I would say that we went against medical advice.
Yes, we did.
More than once.
Yes.
We had several specialists and we had several discussions with inside the organization about what was the right thing. What were we going to do? And at the end of the day, we knew the horse better
mm-hmm.
than any doctor.
Yes.
So we knew eventually what she was capable of.
Yes.
And, you know, we were giving, the diagnosis was if she can live with this leg for a year, it's a miracle. We're mm-hmm. going on several years today and she has no issues.
Yes, which is
I know, crazy. Knock on wood. But it's just, I think it shows that when you find yourself in situations, of life or death, you know, we had a groom here. He said something one time. He said he believes in God very much. And he said, God, if there's room for healing here, please heal. If not, we will all accept and move on.
Yes.
And I think I really took that to heart. And I feel like I will do everything that I can. And if there is healing there, you know, God can't work and the universe can't work immediate, you have to sometimes give it time.
Yes.
And if we as the caretakers of these horses, and for all of you that are listening that have your own horses, if you're being recommended something by your vet, I think it's important to listen to your vet, but it's also important to listen to yourself.
Yeah, listen to your gut and your intuition, because it would be no different than a family member or your own child. If the vet, you know, the vet is recommending something for the horse, or the doctor is recommending something for your child, my own child, I know my child. Mm-hmm. And I believe you have to allow your heart and your intuition to guide you along with that medical advice. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
A lot of people just put all their faith in a doctor, but I have seen over the last 7 years many times when something has been recommended or been told, you guys are wrong, it's this, and then boom, all of a sudden we find out that like we were right. Or we've mm-hmm. caught colics so early before yeah. they've even happened because yeah. we know the horses so well. And yeah. I feel like that just comes with really seeing each individual horse for who they are
yeah.
and getting to know them.
What do you hope happens to your organization? Where would you like to go with it?
I think we're doing really well. I mean, I'm not one of those people who's like, oh, I want to get really big. And, you know, I at the end of the year, I'm going to tell you all how many horses we've adopted out. And I feel like this is, it's a great size. It could even be a little smaller. I feel like I love my team. Maybe we would just change the fencing next door.
Yeah.
You know what
yeah,
I mean? There's yeah, not really yeah. much that I can say. I feel like we're growing at the pace we're supposed to be growing at.
Yeah.
And I don't mean that just in size of animals or years. I mean emotionally. I mean we have learned so much on this journey, and I feel like we are making decisions as the years go. You know what I mean? I don't have a long-term plan. I believe that the horses and the animals are going to tell us what our plan are.
Yeah, and I think that you've also never picked the animals. I think the only time you've actually picked an animal is when we did the BLM auction.
Yes.
And we had to pick. It was like, pick one photo.
Right.
But other than that, when we've been at auctions, it's like you have 3 seconds before you put your paddle up. Or we've been on deadlines and feedlots,
right.
Which has been like yes or no kind of thing.
Yeah.
Do you want to push yes, send money on PayPal or not?
Right.
So I do believe the horses that are meant to be here, they will come here.
I agree with that. I totally agree with that. Unless it's at the auction and I don't give anyone else a chance because I just hold my paddle up the whole time.
One time she bought an entire auction. It was one of my favorite days ever.
I never put the paddle down. It was really an interesting time.
No, she stood up with the paddle. Everyone else sat down.
Really, see, it depends on the horse.
Mm-hmm. If you can only have one snack.
Well, I would say right now, because of my pony, that it's cucumbers.
Yeah, and I think we should recommend that. I don't know
yes,
anyone else.
I don't know anyone either, but for anyone who's got a horse with Cushing's yeah. and a horse that can't have any sugar,
yeah.
cucumbers are a hit. They yeah. are a hit.
Yeah, also celery.
And celery. I know we should get him some celery.
Yeah, we should try.
We should try some celery.
He went through a celery phase. Now he's more in a cucumber phase
because yeah.
they carry more water, but the celery doesn't have any sugar.
Yeah.
So I know you do not really use any tack because you don't really ride that often, but what is like a favorite product or a favorite tack? Anything that you want to like recommend that you like?
I mean, I believe that hackamores are amazing. I believe that until I used one, I was always taught that you had to put a bit in a horse's mouth. Mm-hmm. And so I think a lot of times people do things because that's sort of what everybody is doing. I think using a hackamore and realizing that you can, with some horses, have as much control and sort of have the same relaxed calmness in a horse where you're communicating with each other, that would be my go-to recommendation. Is if you haven't tried it and you have a new horse, maybe start with less.
Yeah, and I think a motto that we have is like, we don't use bits here at the organization, but whatever people do when they have a horse at home, we are not against them using a bit.
Right.
Because I don't feel like, and I'm not going to say that it's abusive to do it if you do it in the right way and if you have proper dental care and you have a proper fitted bridle. So anyway, it is a very controversial question, and it's like an entire episode
yes.
in its own. But I would say that I recommend hackamores 100%. And I think if you can't ride your horse in a hackamore, you don't really have a business riding it.
I agree with that.
Because if you have to use that much force and that much strength that you have to have a bit to be able to ride your horse, I think you got to go back.
Take backward steps.
Yes, and then really start from the beginning and get to a place of communication where you can ride in a hackamore or a halter and eventually with nothing at all.
Well, because because what happens at the end of that, if you're willing to put in the time, is that you both have an incredible experience. And I think only you having a good experience isn't fair to the horse. So when you do take the steps back to figure out, why do I have to pull so hard, or why do I have to use so much strength, and you fix that, the both of you will then be able to enjoy the experience together. And isn't that really what it's all about?
Yeah, 100%. That is what it's about for me.
Yeah.
And I think less tack, the better. But I also, like I said in my last episode, all the Mustangs, I want them to be able to do everything and be used to anything, because I then believe that that means freedom in a way. If then they go to a home that they were, it's like, I've used a bit for 50 years and I'm going to use a bit, but I'm going to ride in a safe way with it.
Right.
So again, as this podcast, and what I want to do with this podcast, is for all branches of equestrian people to meet and for us all to take away something from each other.
Yes.
So thank you so much.
Thank you so much. This was so fun.
This was so fun. And I bet she will be back on here at some point. So where can we find you?
You can find us at alittlerescue.com. You can find us on Instagram at A Little Rescue. You can find us on Facebook at A Little Rescue. We are open, you know, 7 days a week if anyone wants to come and see any of our horses. And but we post an update as often as possible.
Do we have a volunteer program?
We do have a volunteer program. And our volunteer application can be found on our website, along with our application for adoption. So, you know, email us also at alittlerescue@aol.com.
Yep.
Someone will always get back to you.
Yes. And you can also reach the organization through me. And Brandy is a very nice person, and she never asks for donations. But it is a nonprofit organization, so yes, any dollar always helps, and it goes directly to the horses. So you can find all that links on any of the social media that she just mentioned.
Yes.
So thank you again for listening. And yeah, I'll be back next week. Bye.
Bye.